discussing national and international issues. You're listening to Pella Neroth-Taylor on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome to today's show on the Pella Neroth-Taylor Show on TNT News Talk. We live in dramatic times, and we've got four excellent guests who will highlight different aspects of today's news and events. The big story is, of course, that Israel has so far held off on a counterstrike on Iran that could, at the worst, lead to an Iranian big counter-escalation, tens of thousands of deaths, and maybe World War III. There are different stories emerging. We've got the EU foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, warning that we're on the edge of a regional war in the Middle East, according to the Associated Press. However, Borrell's said big words in the past and never fails to dramatize things. On the other hand, we've also got the Israeli leftist newspaper, Haaretz, on its news blog, saying that the Israeli war cabinet is unanimous in its decision to actually mount a forceful strike on Iran, which is worrying. But it says it'll happen after Passover, which is a Jewish holiday. That means after the 30th of April. So 2 weeks till Armageddon, folks. That said, we have a very interesting story from the Seymour Hersh, who won his first Pulitzer Prize before most of the world's population was even born. And he was very famous in the Vietnam War. And he's on his very well read Substack page. He's got a huge number of contacts in the Pentagon and the CIA. He says that it was all a show, this whole thing, and that the Russians were actually cooperating with the Americans to make sure nothing happened, and that the Russians leaned on the Iranians, and the Americans decided that to create a sort of theatrical show where the Iranians were not going to shoot at serious targets and the Americans would be taking it down. Of course, the Israelis, if they're going to take advantage of this sort of protection that the great powers offered them, then choose to escalate. Well, we don't know what's going to happen next, but it does show that there are great forces united behind the scenes to prevent World War III, and that includes the Russians. And I've always said that if you treat them seriously, treat them as a great power, they are responsible people. We've got a couple of great guests with us today. We've got Casey Allen, who's an American blogger and podcaster, who's going to talk to us about what the hell's going on in New York with this latest trial of Donald Trump, latest case of lawfare by the Democrats and their sort of corrupt judicial system. It's hard to keep track of all the cases, but they're all interesting in their own way, and Casey will tell us about it. We've got Michael Waller as our second guest, the former CIA operative and whistleblower, who's going to tell us about the Supreme Court battle over whether the hundreds of J6 protesters sitting in jail, what many regard to be completely bogus charges, are actually going to be set free or not. The court seems to be divided in what for many Republicans is a clear cut and dried case of bogus jailings. Let these people out, I say. After the hour, we've got Ishik Abla, who's born in Istanbul, Turkey, and raised in a Muslim home, but she was subjected throughout her life to verbal and physical abuse and found herself in an extremely bad relationship with a Muslim man who beat her senseless. She earned a bachelor's degree in literature, worked with various corporate organizations, and in 1996 she went to America, and but was so depressed after all her travails that she thought of committing suicide. But then she found God and Christianity, and she is going to tell us about her highly viewed podcast and blog that tries to kind of reconcile Christianity and Islam from her perspective, trying to bring them together in a sort of reconciliation. We've talked a lot about Palestinians as victims and Israelis as the victors or the aggressors, but there's a whole other narrative which you can remember from the Great War of Terror or Great War on Terror, take your pick, until 2010, where Islam was an evil religion and Christianity was good, and we were kind of fighting on those premises. And it's good to revisit some of those religious issues. Finally, we've got Paul Fitzgerald and Elizabeth Gold, who are returning guests, who are going to draw on their extensive insights from the Middle East. They made documentaries about Afghanistan and know Iran quite well. And they're going to tell us about how the neocons, not all of whom were Jewish, some of whom were fervent Christians, came to sabotage the Nixon-Russian detente movement, which we're sort of seeing a little bit now, actually, behind the scenes. And that led to a renewed Cold War, and it was all terribly unnecessary. We're still living with the consequences of the black-white vision of the neocons today. Before we do that, we're going to talk a little bit about the Israeli army's artificial intelligence-based program called Lavender, which is almost like it's an incredible project in its viciousness, using AI and maybe even WhatsApp messages to identify terrorists in Gaza, except they're not terrorists, they can be normal people, and just whacking them with missiles and using AI to determine your terrorist score, and just a sort of casual sign-off by young conscripts or young officers or whatever in the Israeli army. And that is a big contributor to these tens of thousands of deaths. It doesn't take much to end up on the Lavender kill list. So this is a future of war, robots and AI deciding questions of life and death. With us to talk about this and other of the day's news, we've got Basil Valentine, our political editor, after a very quick break. This is the Pelle Neroth-Taylor show on TNT News Talk.
Clashing on the controversies.
It's a woke society, and I am fed up with it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Pelle Neroth-Taylor show. We've got Basil Valentine, political editor, with us. How are you, Basil?
Very well, thank you, Pelle, and hello to our viewers and listeners all around the world.
What is this Lavender project?
Well, it's nightmarish, isn't it? And now Meta, formerly known as Facebook, have become implicated in it because it seems targets are selected on the basis of shared WhatsApp threads. So if you are in a WhatsApp group with individuals that Lavender has identified as militants or terrorists, which basically means, well, if not anybody resisting the occupation, possibly even any men of fighting age, then you yourself become a target. And we know that women and children have been liberally included in the kill lists. Witness the casualty figures. Now, the problem for Meta and its founder, Mark Zuckerberg, is that this opens the way to a class action lawsuit on the basis of breach of confidentiality data, particularly if it leads to death or maiming. So it remains to be seen whether any such law case comes into being, and if so, in which jurisdiction. Because what it brings into sharp focus, really, Pelle, is do Palestinians have the same human rights and recourse to law as those of us in other parts of the world would expect?
Yeah, I mean, it's a kind of nightmarish case which piles on the pressure of Israel if it comes out, of course. It was all this, by the way, this article, the brilliant quote, was in a magazine called Plus 972, which is an Israeli magazine, quite well regarded. Plus 972 is, of course, the Israeli dialing code. And I could tell the author's name is an Israeli. So he's talked to a lot of people. It's a very well-sourced article. And I'm just going to say, during the early stages of the war, the army gave sweeping approval for officers to adopt Lavender's kill lists with no requirement to thoroughly check why the machine made those choices or examine the raw intelligence data on which they're based. One source stated that human personnel often served only as a rubber stamp for the machine's decisions, and they would devote only about 20 seconds to each target before authorizing the bombing, just to make sure the Lavender mark target is male. However, the Israeli army attacked the targeted individuals while they're in their homes, usually at nights when their whole families were present, rather than the course of military activity. According to the sources, it was because what they regard as, from an intelligence standpoint, it was easier to locate the individuals in their private houses. Additional automated systems, including one called Where's Daddy, also revealed for the first time, were used to track the targeted individuals and carry out bombings when they entered the family's residence. And of course, you know, there are a lot of kids and women around there. So hence a lot of these, and especially apparently at the beginning of this process, the counterattack from Israelis, they used this almost exclusively, and they used dumb bombs rather than smart bombs because it's cheaper. And that's hence the sort of Dresden-like devastation of Gaza, as I understand. The thing about the Israelis, the thing from a journalistic point of view, is they're very easy to talk to, apparently. I remember that Ronan Bergman book where, you know, these Mossad officials are just boasting about what they do to people. I mean, Mossad probably has the highest kill rate of any intelligence agency in the world. And they're saying, well, you know, we did this exploding toothpaste. We did all these things. We assassinated. There's even hint that Yasser Arafat was poisoned. And so it's kind of, Israel is an open society where people talk about these things. And there is a free press in the sense that this article is published in Israel and the guy's not going to jail and things. So kudos for that. But it was
a couple of points to pick up on there, Perry. Yes, Daniel Hagari, the Israeli army spokesman, said right at the beginning that Israel was focused on destruction, not on accuracy. And you're right. If you read the Israeli press, you get a far more honest description of what's going on, what they intend to do, than you do from the West, who sanitize everything that we hear coming out of Israel, extremely selective about it. All you actually need to do is read Haaretz or 972, Israel's own publications, to get the full force of the genocidal intent. On X today, various Zionists have been posting a clip of Gazans on the beach, hundreds of people looking, I should say, particularly bedraggled, just sort of milling about on the beach, and posting this as if it's evidence that there's no genocide because they are alive and not actually being shot at in that moment. It's absolutely extraordinary stuff. Meanwhile, today, and this is hot off the presses, the UN Security Council is due to vote this afternoon on Palestinian United Nations full membership, which, of course, the US is expected to veto, because although it pays lip service to a two-state solution and the establishment of a Palestinian state, it claims it would only recognize such a state at the end of a lengthy bilateral process with Israel, which, of course, means never. Plus, of course, there have been some cables intercepted recently, which indicate that the US's so-called support for the two-state solution is merely lip service. It's only designed as camouflage, and they don't really have any intention whatsoever on following through with it.
What do you think of that story? Did you see that story with Seymour Hersh saying that the Pentagon went behind the State Department's back, basically, in the US and got the okay? It didn't involve Biden very much, but got his green light when they decided it. But they reached out to the Russians and got the Russians to coordinate with the Iranians and Khamenei. And so it was the whole, well, we knew it was a stick shot, but he gives some of the details of the stick shot. But basically, it did involve the Russians. And I thought, well, the Russians and the Americans were sort of secretly guessing each other's motivations not to escalate, but it seems as if they were in direct contact and consulting. And I'm going to talk to one of my guests later today about how they're going to talk about how Nixon reached out to the Russians in 1973 and they prevented an escalation there. And the neocons in America didn't like that because they had a very black and white view of the conflict, good versus evil. And they didn't like detente at all, which saw it was a collaboration between the Russians, and they set about sabotaging it, infiltrating the Democratic Party in 1973. Some of them were Jews, but not all of them. You had and basically leading to the Cold War II of Reagan in the 1980s. We've got to get away from this biblical Old Testament, I have to say, Jewish black and white thinking that you have to destroy your enemy until he's absolutely dead, or you will be destroyed, you know? And I was saying the other day about this, the Old Testament is full of imprecations like that, to have to kill your enemy. And we kind of moved on beyond that. We can't have that attitude in the nuclear age, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, it's medieval in thinking, really, isn't it? An eye for an eye, and the whole world is blind. So, yes, you know, one had hope that particularly since the Second World War, and the establishment of the United Nations, that diplomacy would always be to the fore when it came to any international conflict. And that was the whole point of the thing in the first place, that, you know, armed conflict would really be marginalized and derided by world leaders across the board as being the most primitive way of settling a dispute, the very last resort. But particularly since 9/11, it's been the first resort. I mean, there was a spring, wasn't there, in the 1970s when the Vietnam War wrought such a terrible toll on American society and American young men. And you had the Church Commission and the subsequent election of Jimmy Carter. And, you know, it was felt and hoped that we might be in a new era at that point, you know. And to some extent, that continued even through the Reagan years. Yes, yeah. The neocons got hold of Reagan, but there was even greater detente, of course, which led to the big SALT treaties and all the rest of it in the 1980s and 90s. Right. You can forget Gorbachev and Reagan in Reykjavik and, you know, the fall of the Berlin Wall, so on and so forth. Great, you know, looking back now, days of tremendous enlightenment all came to a shuddering halt on 9/11/2001.
Yeah. We just keep you on for a bit, Basil, for a few minutes at least. What this Israeli decision to go or not go, have you got any thoughts about that? Because I think you have a kind of more up-to-date and closer reading of all the latest info that's coming up on this. And I just said that but they're downsizing a little bit in the Western news press, but Haaretz said that they're going to go in after Passover. Have you got any thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, they're sort of scheduled to go in on two fronts, against the Iranians and against Rafah. There's a clip during the rounds on social media of a particularly feeble-looking Biden saying, I said not to go to Haifa. He said Haifa, which, of course, is a city in northern Israel.
Right. Port city. Okay.
He meant Rafah.
Right.
He said Haifa. So we really are right at the pivot point of the balancing act. According to David Cameron, who saw Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister has brushed off calls for restraints and fully intends some sort of fairly major retaliation against Iran. Apparently, they are currently in talks with the White House about exactly what the nature of that will be and indeed what the assault on Rafah will be.
Okay, but both we'll talk pending. More about that in the next hour, maybe. It's an ongoing story, obviously, and maybe the Americans can't pull off another theatrical performance if the Israelis are taking advantage of it to just have a go at Iran. Not counting their blessings of an American protection of their homeland. Anyway, thanks a lot, Basil Valentine. This is a TNT News Talk Pelle Neroth-Taylor show. We'll be back after a very quick break with our first guest, Casey Allen.
TNT's James Freeman.
The issue I raise is how this year's US presidential election presents a clear and present danger to the world, given the weakness of Joe Biden, the current President of the United States. It is clear that the world needs right now, what the world needs is a US president that projects power, takes decisions, and sets a clear pathway on foreign policy. But instead, we've got a president who prefers to sit idly by, leaving a dangerous vacuum in his wake. What we've got at the moment is Joe Biden being a backseat driver who is trying to drive world affairs without putting his hands on the wheel.
James Freeman on today's News Talk TNT. CO2, the world stops breathing. CO2 sustains all life on Earth. Government, the WEF, and the elite believe humans are the carbon they really want to be rid of. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Pelle Neroth-Taylor Show on this Thursday afternoon. We're going to pivot to the United States now, where a lot's going on there. We've got we're going to talk to Casey Allen, who's a 23-year-old American journalist who hosts the Casey Allen Show. In his talk show and on X, he covers American values, culture, finance, politics, and foreign policy, and more. He's an American patriot who supports free speech, and he's here to tell us about the New York case with Donald Trump, which is incredibly confusing because there's been so many cases against Trump. Welcome to the show, Casey.
Thanks for having me back on, Pell. It's great to be here. So it's very confusing when it comes to Donald Trump and all of his civil cases. And when it comes to New York individually, he has several going on. So there is the indictment case in which, or I'm sorry, the documents case. And that's in Florida. So in New York, there is the Manhattan case in which Letitia James is ordering Donald Trump to pay $355 million simply because they claim that he essentially raised the value on his properties and reported false documents when it comes to reporting his taxes. So this is simply a political persecution when it comes to Letitia James. Now there's also the hush money trial in which essentially there's no victim and there's nobody who is actually no crime technically committed here that's been proven. Essentially, Donald Trump 20 years ago paid porn star Stormy Daniels hush money, but they claim that it came from his business dealings and he falsified business records in order to essentially cover up these doings. Now, if you look at everything in total, it definitely appears to be a political persecution. Like I said, this is a U.S. or former U.S. president that is now likely to take over again for a second term and is the leading nominee for the Republican Party. So it's no surprise as to why there's such an attack on him and his political persecution as we see. And his lawyer, Alina Haba, has even gone as far to say that there is no possible chance for a fair trial here. So it's honestly unbelievable that we're hearing this. And I'm sure people that aren't from America are quite surprised to see this is happening within our own justice system.
Well, the very latest system, I mean, there's only 24 hours in a day, so I haven't focused on the latest Trump case, just except a glance at the headline that the jurors are failing to be sworn in or whatever because they're not objective in a city like New York, okay? But this latest case, there are three, how many New York based cases are there against Trump? There's a Letitia James. Well, who is Letitia James? Is that the prosecutor?
She's in New York. Yeah, she's a New York attorney general that was essentially she was running for re-election and her way of getting popularity within the Democratic Party was to go after Donald Trump. And since then, right. She's gained immense popularity within her party. And that's her only reasoning, just getting her to go after Trump and boosting her personal career.
Right. And then the second case is, just remind us again.
Yeah, the second case is they call it the New York hush money case. It's essentially right. Where okay. Donald Trump. Yeah, over 20 years
ago. I remember
that.
And then this third case, is there a third case now as well? And that just tells a little bit more detail about that.
Yeah, so it's very strange. They're trying to make this, it's almost like the business dealings. It's like it's one case stretched out into several. So they're now trying to say that Donald Trump is barred from doing business in New York. So like he obviously owns real estate, you know, the Trump Tower, as you see all throughout America. He's got plenty of business, millions and billions of dollars in business in New York. They're essentially saying he is no longer able to do business there and he's going to have to sell his property.
Mm. Well, I mean, but the liberal media seem more excited than usual about this case. I mean, it even crowds out like possible World War III in the Middle East. So why are they salivating? Do you think, is there a greater chance of nailing Trump? Could he go to jail? I mean, I know there's really basic questions, but, you know, we don't have all time to follow the ins and outs.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's honestly very likely at this point, as sad as it is to say, and as much as I've been supportive of President Trump and I plan to vote for him for a second time, I think it is very likely that the Democrats are going to do everything they possibly can to get Donald Trump in a jail cell and stop him from running in this election. Although, according to the Constitution, Donald Trump is still able to run for president behind a jail cell, even if he is indicted. So what I can say is the left. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was that?
So why is this particular case? I mean, I feel like a moron here, particularly likely to end up in a prison sentence, whereas the other cases were not.
I think that if they can somehow find any way to distort business records or make him look like he is this an unethical businessman, by just distorting a few numbers, they can easily do that. And especially when Judge Engoron, the people who are prosecuting him, are dead set against him, have a vendetta and a bias. And it's so obvious. You don't even have to be in the courtroom to see it, to clearly see the bias situation.
Right. Okay. Well, apologies to political junkies on both sides of the Atlantic for this very basic summary. But we're going to talk about, after a quick news break, the 60-second news break, I think it is, We're going to talk about what's supposed to be one of the big winning issues for Trump, which is illegal immigration. But of course, immigration, millions of people could be added to Biden's vote total come November. So it could bounce, or it could boomerang. And it's obviously a very controversial issue. So we'll be talking to that about after a very quick break with Casey Allen, American geopolitical and politics expert, back after the news.
Now, TNT Radio News.
I have huge news.
Are you ready for it?
Yeah!
Do it!
Matt Boyland here with your TNT headlines. Beijing has hit out at Australia after Canberra announced it was injecting an extra $50 billion into its armed forces over the next 10 years to help counteract China in the Indo-Pacific.
China firmly opposes this. We hope that Australia will correctly understand China's development and strategic intentions.
And Washington has reportedly agreed to spare WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange the death penalty if he is extradited to the US on espionage charges.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Pelliner Roth Taylor Show on this Thursday afternoon. We've got Casey Allen with us, who's an American journalist and talk show host, who's really up to speed on everything that's going on, and particularly immigration, illegal and legal, which is transforming the American demographic and possibly adding millions of votes to the unpopular Biden's vote tally. What are the most interesting and latest developments on this very fraught topic, Casey?
So a very interesting statistic is that only 16 out of the 50 United States are actually making you require to have a voter ID in order to vote for these upcoming elections. So that's just saying that the remaining states are not required to, basically, if you're voting, you don't have to show a voter ID, you don't have to have any proof of who you are. So this already opens a big possibility with the addition of influx of illegals for a lot of distortion within the election and a lot of fraud to be taken place. So, I mean, think about that, right? That's only 16 out of our 50 states that are actually wanting to take this serious and knowingly wanting to follow the Constitution. So this is a very scary precedent when it comes to this. And when it comes back to Donald Trump, I think this is something he could very well win on, because this is something that has been so egregious within our country from Joe Biden's open border policies that he has taken a very strong stance on wanting to shut down the border, rebuild the wall. And what's also really interesting is Secretary of Homeland Defense Alejandro Mayorkas, that he was actually issued articles of impeachment this past week by Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, led by other conservative leaders. Unfortunately, Senate blocked the bill the first day that they tried to file it, said that Alejandro Mayorkas is not guilty and should not be barred from treason. So even though we're at record high with illegals coming in, this was instantly turned down by the Senate. So it's very interesting how this is playing out. Like it's our whole Congress, our whole Senate is very corrupted with this. And not to mention the border bill here. We have a $95 billion border bill we just signed off on that sends money to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. When at the same time, our border wall could be fixed with $10 billion and we're sending $95 billion in foreign aid.
Yeah, I mean, can you just spend a few minutes just talking about that? Because we in Europe, we worry about, I'm an anti-interventionist. And I think this war in Ukraine would just stop if America stopped sending money. And I didn't think Putin would go on to invade the rest of the world. But what was the deal there? Because Mike Johnson, who was the Speaker of the House of Representatives, he's quite close to Trump and was opposed to forever wars. I've seen some comments of his that he's made. Somebody's assembled the things. He wasn't particularly concerned about Ukraine. He's very concerned about the border. And he said, this is a hill I'm prepared to die on. So he's kind of stalling on money for Ukraine. Or at the very least, he was saying, I won't bring this bill before Congress, which will give money to Ukraine, unless there's a border bill. Because as you said, why should we worry about Ukraine's border when we can't worry about our own? But then he went down to Trump, see Trump in Florida at the weekend. He's come back. And now he seems to have launched some kind of he says he's going to take the bill and put it in front of the Congress, which will be voted through, not least with the support of the Democrats. Did he get any money for the border, or has he just given up on that?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of our Republicans have compromised on this and have given in to what Mike Johnson wants. So this only leaves a very select few of America First patriots, such as Matt Gaetz, Anita Paulina Luna, Marjorie Taylor Greene, the true Americans that aren't corrupted and are able to call this out. There isn't enough of them, unfortunately, and this is most likely, like I said, it's going to get passed because, and with Mike Johnson's help, what he did here is he essentially kissed the wall. Mike Johnson has been very good, been a very America First, wanting to shut down the border, wanting to fix our crisis in our country. But unfortunately, when it came to this decision with foreign aid and helping our American people, he sold out and he went the direction of the left, and he chose his true colors there. So, and the funny thing is, yes, he did meet up with President Trump this past weekend. But what's funny, after President Trump, you know, heard his support for the Israel and Ukraine funding, he says, in quotes, "We'll have to see how this goes when it comes to the his possible vacating a speaker," because that's what many of the America First Republicans are wanting at this point. And again, like, it's very sad that we have to replace another speaker. Mike Johnson's a 56th speaker. Kevin McCarthy was just ousted 8 months ago as their previous speaker. And it's just, it's a continuation of filtering people in and out. I mean, it just really shows that there's a big issue within our judiciary and our Senate.
But, was there any money for, okay, so there's lots of money for Ukraine, lots of money for Israel, more than even was proposed. But is there any money for the border now in this current version?
There's very little. There's some provisions in there, but it's nothing near to what they're sending to Taiwan, to Ukraine. I mean, Taiwan's like, I'd say they're getting like about 10 of the billion. Israel and Ukraine, they're getting a vast majority of this. I think Ukraine was apparting for about half of this bill. So they are dead focused on fixing these foreign leaders' crisis over our own when we have, you know, record high border number or illegals storming into this country. So it's a very scary precedent.
Right. So basically, Mike Johnson has given up on what he's supposed to be his signature thing. He said, "I'm going to die on the hill for the border money," and he's not getting it. So what kind of negotiator is he? I mean, sounds terrible. Anyway, you're saying, can you explain in really simple terms in what way the America Firsters in Congress, the non-corrupt representatives in Europe, we've even heard of them because they pop up occasionally on Twitter and so on. Marjorie Taylor Greene famously told British Foreign Secretary David Cameron to shove off or kiss my ass or whatever. Do they have the ability to get rid of Mike Johnson?
Well, that's very interesting you say that, because you think about 8 months ago when Matt Gaetz stood up and stood for the vacating of Speaker Kevin McCarthy. It actually worked because they proved that McCarthy was compromised by the Biden administration and his corrupt policies that he wanted to pass. This was good getting McCarthy out and getting someone in like Mike Johnson, who allegedly was an America Firster, and up until this point when he sold us out and, you know, he kissed the wall when it comes to foreign aid.
Yeah, but I mean, sorry, again, I have to, if the Democrats support him and if he's supported by many of the rhinos in the Republican Party, I mean, the people who are sort of globalist or whatever you want to call them, pro-warmongers, can't they keep Mike Johnson in power? I mean, they're not that many of them. How many rebels or America Firsters are there in the House of Representatives? How can they withstand a bipartisan support for Mike Johnson?
Well, I will say it's much harder than it was before. With McCarthy, I think there was a lot of actual intel as to why he was corrupting our America First agenda. And Mike Johnson was very slippery. He was very sneaky with the way he was very politician-like. So he was able to get people along this far, the rhinos, the establishment Republicans. Of course, they're going to go along with them. They're not going to want this change to happen. But again, we have to be real here. These people do not represent the America First movement. And like I said, there's only 15 to maybe 20 tops. And the only way that we can, or this movement, this group can get something to the House majority, as if we actually have enough evidence and have the fight and the will to do so. And that's what the one group of America Firsters have in common. So it's a very powerful movement, even though there aren't very many of us.
Okay, we've got to wind up here. So I've got to just ask you one more question, because I mean, some of the blogs I've been reading speculated that Mike Johnson's playing like 3D chess. You know, he's got some really smart plan to he's actually working with Trump to delay Ukraine bill. Do you think this is part of his 3D chess approach. He's actually going to turn around and realize he's a true MAGA Republican? Or do you think, maybe it's a strong word, but has he betrayed the MAGA movement?
I'd say it's very close to betrayal. It's on that line right now. I think there is room for redemption. I think he definitely needs to fall in line to what President Trump is fully doing here. And I can say President Trump is not wanting to send all this foreign aid. He does have sympathy when it comes to Israel for having friends and family that are associated with the Jewish movement. But when it comes to actually, Ukraine and the other foreign nations, he wants to put our country first. He was the one that wanted to build this wall in the first place. Yeah. If Mike Johnson does not give in to this, if he says he simply wants to side with the Democrats and the globalists to fund these, countries that aren't in our best interest, then he's essentially chosen to side. But until he does, he's very well looking like he's betrayed the America First movement.
Okay, well, I'm sorry to hear that, but very interesting to talk to you, Casey Allen, American journalist and talk show host. You can find him on Twitter and on The Casey Allen Show, K-A-C-E-E. And we'd have you on again very soon to talk about the latest updates on American politics. Thank you very much. This is the Pelle Neroth Taylor Show on TNT News Talk. Back after the break with our next guest.
Thank you.
Hi. I'm your retirement fear. But don't be scared. You're still in pre-retirement.
Pre-retirement? Does that mean I have more time to plan?
Precisely. Here, this is pre-retirement.org.
Retirement savings options? Potential tax breaks?
Yep. Boo.
Oh, I could build up savings for my side hustle. This isn't scary. I'm doing it.
You got this.
Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan.
Many pollution sources can affect the air you breathe, from power plants and vehicles to dust and wildfires. Knowing more about local air quality can help you protect your health. If you're thinking about buying an air sensor, EPA has a series of videos to help you get the most out of it. Learn how EPA collects and uses regulatory data, how EPA communicates health messaging, and how to interpret the readings from your sensor. Visit epa.gov/air-sensor-toolbox.
Propaganda versus the truth. You're with Swedish-British journalist Pelle Neroth Taylor on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the Pelle Neroth Taylor Show. We've got an old friend with us as a second guest on this Thursday afternoon, J. Michael Waller, who's a former CIA operative, author of Big Intel, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War Heroes to Deep State Villains. The book deals about how once upon a time the FBI and CIA fought America's enemies at home and abroad. Now they've gone woke and are tools of a growing police state in America, attacking the Democrats' political enemies and spying on ordinary Americans. So we have an obvious topic to talk about, which is the J6 prisoners and how their fate might be decided in the Supreme Court. Welcome to the show, Michael. How are you?
All right. It's great to be back.
You wanted to talk about, or you thought this is particularly newsy, this Supreme Court battle that's going on about whether some of these J6 prisoners who are sort of the larger story is that they are kind of victims of the American police state, maybe, I think you'd agree. What is there a chance that could you tell the backstory, and what do you think the developments tell us if they're going to be let out, if some justice will be had for them finally?
Well, you know, we're entitled to a rapid trial and rapid justice. And here this has lagged on for 3 years. And these prisoners have been put in some of the worst conditions possible in an American prison, to the point where a federal judge who has been very harsh toward his verdicts toward the prisoners had to go in and hold the marshal of the prison in contempt because the conditions were so awful.
Right. Do you think, I mean, what's the Supreme Court seems split, right? Why are they split, and how do they split? I mean, who's on which side?
Well, it's It's almost always split. It's usually split. It's how the different justices interpret the Constitution, and that boils down to their worldviews. You have those who are strict adherents to our constitutional principles, which is the majority right now, and then you have those who think the Constitution is a living document that they can interpret any way they wish, and that's the liberal minority right now. Sometimes, though, the liberal minority does come down on civil liberties because they see a larger picture. Again, they see it beyond the Constitution, but they see a larger picture in terms of social justice. And if this case sets a precedent for bad social justice and legalizing ill treatment of prisoners and miscarriages of justice on political grounds, they might even oppose what's happening to these prisoners.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that the social justice converts or activists on the Supreme Court are supporting the release of these prisoners, or are they against the release of these prisoners?
No, they could. It's hard to tell. I would suspect that they're going to be against the release of the prisoners, but there's a chance that some of them might actually support it on the grounds that the precedent that the court is setting, or the constitutional determination that the court is setting, will reflect on, say, some of their own favorite people someday.
You spell that out? I mean, how would that give me a concrete example of how it could hit back at their own favorite people?
Well, let's say that they decide that the treatment of the prisoners is fine. It's consistent with the Constitution. This is the final word of the court. They might decide that, but they might also think, well, wait a minute. Right now, what about when our own left-wing friends are arrested? This is going to set a precedent for their mistreatment. So they might say, we don't want to set this kind of a precedent. It might be better for justice to remain blind.
Yeah, of course. But isn't it a procedural issue that there were two kinds of, there's a kind of felony that they were, these people were, the J6 prisoners were held on. I think it was about a document. It was passed after the Enron scandal, where you're not allowed to obstruct or interfere with a state proceeding or something. And that was, at the time, it was originally held to be looking at obstruction or sort of shredding of documents. But I think a lot of people who were not held on other causes were jailed, J6 prisoners, because they were held to be obstructing the certification of the US election. But that wasn't the original intention. This is lawyer thinking to stretch anti-document shredding laws to sort of going into the and strolling around the Capitol building.
Right, right. They have nothing to do with one another. And when the prosecutor says that they do, then you can invent any kind of crime. There was a famous New York judge who once said that you can indict a ham sandwich. And this seems to be a ham sandwich indictment in terms of at least how the prosecution has been. Just bust the people for trespassing. If they committed trespassing crimes, if they committed destruction of property crimes, okay, punish them for that if they're found guilty of it. But don't start inventing document shredding cases against people who broke a window or illegally took over a public place.
Mm. And we're talking about maybe not everyone who's in jail at the moment, but dozens could be set free immediately. Are they entitled to any kind of compensation from the American government for being held under on the wrong cause?
They would either have to go back and sue for that, which none of them are able to do unless they have lawyers who will do it on a contingency basis or pro bono. Or you might have a case where the court would order restitution immediately in this ruling, but that's not what the Supreme Court does. The Supreme Court interprets the constitutionality of laws and the enforcement of laws. So I would expect they would have to go back through a lengthy civil court process against a Justice Department that has unlimited resources.
You say, so obviously, the Supreme Court is supposed to be a non-political body, and it's sort of the highest instance in American politics. It's supposed to be neutral down the ages. But can we imagine, I'm always thinking in terms of a political angle, because do the Biden administration, who seems to be lagging Trump, see this as a potential vote winner for Trump and is trying to sort of, spike the guns of the Trump movement? Because the J6 thing is very emotional and obviously It's a rallying point for a lot of people among in the MAGA movement, you know, fathers, sort of dog owners, you know, deputy sheriffs being jailed on really silly causes. Are the Biden administration types re-election campaigners hoping for some kind of outcome of this? What sure. benefits Biden?
Well, they politicize everything possible. So more than any other president, besides maybe Obama, and they're just an extension of that. What they thought they had was they thought they had an open and shut popular case of the J6, the whole J6 issue being something that was repulsive to the whole country. And indeed, the scenes of violence and crimes against the Capitol building, which is sort of a secular cathedral to in the U.S., you've got it seemed like a real win. But as usual, the administration overextended itself, pushed too hard, made things too extreme, and then made people realize, well, wait a minute, they're weaponizing the government in ways that we never saw. So in cases like what you brought up before, applying document shredding precedent from Enron case to a simple case of criminal trespassing and destruction of property, people see that overstretch, and then they see that overstretch in their regular lives, and then they see how other parts of the government are being so politicized, down to the Federal Communications Committee and now the Security and Exchange Commission. They see this weaponization of government as a big threat. So the administration is facing a big losing issue.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about how other governmental overreach? You just talked about communications. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, the Federal Communications Commission is a New Deal, Franklin Roosevelt era, independent government commission. It's bipartisan, and it's supposed to not respond to whatever the White House wants. And it regulates the airwaves. So the public airwaves are public property, therefore subject to commercial regulations. But what the FCC has done now is they have taken the internet, which was viewed as not airwaves, and they are weaponizing the commission now to be able to force internet service providers, so the companies that actually provide the internet services, to force them to censor content to make sure that shows like yours are not shown, either in certain markets, if at all. And it would do this through a combination of financial incentives to lower rates and penalties. And they don't call it censorship. They call it consumer protection. So that's coming up. A censorship regime, it makes the FBI Twitter files look really small in comparison. And now the Securities and Exchange Commission, which regulates, stock trades and investments and so forth, wants to run, which they already have, a real-time database for real-time monitoring of all people in the United States who trade in stocks and other investments. Why? What possible could that be?
Well, what's their motive? What are their real intentions? I mean, it's a huge intrusion on people's integrity. But I mean, what are they trying to achieve with it? I mean, what are they worried about? Everyone's worried about losing power, I suppose. So there must be some kind of
This is about
is it just to give jobs for bureaucrats?
It's more like a one-party state type regime that they want to set up. In the case of the FCC, they're saying it's for consumer protection, and it's for equity, and it's for extending internet service to communities that are too poor or whatever or remote to have them. Well, it's really not that. With the Securities and Exchange Commission, they say it's to fight crime. Okay. Everything is to fight crime or from the children.
I have to confess an interest. As soon as you say talk about my show, I suddenly perk up and sort of think, well, how could they restrict truth-seeking shows in the name of equity? How do they link that, even in their own logic?
Well, notice how they've dispensed with the term truth.
Right.
They've gotten rid of that. There's no longer truth and falsehood to them. I don't know if you saw recently the new chairman of National Public Radio, who she's on video saying that we're in an age now where the biggest threat to fighting disinformation is the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, for free speech.
Wow.
Free speech is an impediment to the fight against disinformation. Now, right. So what's disinformation? They've adopted the term disinformation from the Soviet KGB, which came up with the term, and they're using it to replace the word lies. So So you don't talk about truth and lies anymore, or truth and falsehood. They don't even talk about falsehood. So they're now arbiters of a morally neutral. She says everyone has their own truth. So we can all speak with our own truth. That's not true. I mean, it's truth. Mm-hmm. It's inaccuracy. It's misinterpretation. It's lies. It all depends. So when they're changing that language, and now they're removing the area for civil disagreement. Mm. And they can say, you know, Pella, you're a great guy, but I don't like the content of what you say. I disagree with it, or it's a distortion of what I think. No, they're saying you're spreading disinformation. Therefore, we can shut you down under these new communications rules.
And you're sort of, I can sort of see that there's a kind of, I don't know, fourth wave feminist thing, because women have this very strong anti-harms mentality. Discussion is a form of violence, you know. So, I don't know, our enlightenment theory that you thrash things out by sometimes violent disagreement and then go for a beer afterwards. I mean, that's a kind of a male thing. You're competitive. But it's all for a greater good, because, I mean, look at any university in the old days. I mean, people were violently disagreeing, and that's the basis of our progress. Bad ideas get discarded, good ideas win, and everyone wins in the end, you know. But now you're sort of going against this idea that if you promote your idea that offends someone because of its emotional content or its emotional perception, then it has to be banned. And then the arbiters of truth, no one knows the truth. That's the thing. Everything is under constant revision. History books are a constant discussion. I just read one about the Rwanda war, which is totally different from what you read in the New York Times, of course, Kennedy and all the rest of it. But you're not allowed to have that anymore. You have to have some kind of government truth. That's what you seem to be hinting at. All in the name of people who don't have the intelligence to argue things through. Maybe they should be protected from cleverer people than them or something, arguing things out, you know?
Yeah.
That's
clever people. Yeah, it's the equivalent of, you know, something's wrong and they say, I'm fine.
Yeah. We're going to try and pivot or circle back to your book, Big Intel, because you were sort of linking it all to the sort of communist mentality coming out of Europe after the war, cultural Bolshevism and kind of infiltrating American academia and American popular culture. Can you talk about that for a couple of minutes? We've got 3 minutes left, because it's interesting always to give these backgrounds, why America is where it is right now. So you've got 2.5 minutes to talk about it.
Sure. America was built on Enlightenment principles. Freedom of thought, freedom of speech, individual action, individual responsibility. So it's a Judeo-Christian ethic refined from the Enlightenment, secularized to include everybody. And then what you had then in the 19th century was an anti-Enlightenment counter-revolution of the Marxists and the socialists and others who wanted to impose everything on everybody. So it's sort of like progressive monarchies of the 19th century or something, which at least saw themselves as being progressive, but they could not respond to honest, open debate. They could not respond to a search for truth. It had to be with violence and coercion. That was the whole premise of the book, The Big Intel, that I wrote, because I found that these Central European ideologies that were then weaponized by the Soviet government became what we know today as critical theory, critical race theory, and they have permeated the mentality of not just the intelligence services like the FBI and the CIA, but also our Justice Department and our court systems.
Of course, there's a guy called Golitsyn. Do you remember him?
Yes.
From the 1980s, because he was saying that it was all a Soviet plot. The whole end of communism thing was a Soviet plot to retrench, and then they're going to send their bad ideas to the West, and the West would self-destruct after a couple of decades. Do you think that's come to pass now? I mean, there's a lot of talk about decline of the West, and do you think that's where we are now? We've become Sovietized.
Well, this was a managed decline that was designed in the 1920s. So it's been going on for a century. So when the Soviet Union collapsed, you notice the one institution that survived the Soviet collapse was the old KGB.
Right.
They just divided it into different parts and changed the names. But that's the real only thing that remained. And they helped Gorbachev. They brought Gorbachev to power, and they were pretty sanguine about the whole Soviet collapse. So what Golitsyn predicted really has been coming true.
What Do you think, we've got time for one comment. Do you think, why did Mike Johnson and Trump seem to cave in on this border funding issue and money for Ukraine and Israel? Because doesn't that go against Trump's whole campaign thing?
Well, it goes
Is
against
he
his
blackmailed
own
or something? We've got 10 seconds.
It's hard to say. Speaker Johnson is a really nice guy who loves to please and can't stand saying no. And I think they just put him into a box and forced the issue on him. But but if the Democrats want Ukraine aid and the Republicans want a secure border, there's no reason that we can't have both in a
okay.
country like
Mike,
that.
Johnson's thank you very much. We've got to go into the break. This is Mike Waller. Thank you very much on today's TNT News Talk. We're going to get...